This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. It is 1 o'clock, which means escape hour. This is your food and travel show. We're all very excited to be here with you. My name is Russ Masterton, and across the panel from me today, I've got the lovely, the gorgeous Tad Lombardo. Good afternoon. How are you, young friend?
I'm well. How about you?
Young being the operative word there.
Trying to be.
Well, you are. Living life to the youngest. Yeah, as they say.
My 51-year-old self.
Did you have a good week? We're going to ignore that 51 remark.
Yeah.
You don't look
I'm
it.
Proud
you don't
of it.
Look it.
No, thank no. you.
Did you have a good week?
I did have a good week, yeah. So it's nothing too terribly eventful. Yeah. Just getting by, which is important.
Well, it's winter.
Still a smile on
Melbourne
my face.
Winter.
Yeah, it's a bit depressing, but, you know, right. you get through it. Sun's out today, which is good.
You just have to get out there.
Yeah, you do.
That's what you need to be doing.
And that beautiful voice is the voice of Fiona Brooke, who has been up early today. What have you been doing?
Well, it is open house weekend.
Wow. Okay.
And it's the 10th anniversary. And in my other life, I am actually a publicist for open house. So I was filming.
How many hats have you got on today?
I always wear a lot of hats.
Yeah. Oh, what are you wearing, by the way?
Well, today I had to get up at 6 a.m. to go to a filming for a certain TV station.
Yeah.
And so I was not thinking and really not interested in doing anything other than getting coffee down my neck when I had to get up.
6 o'clock on a Saturday is a big ask, isn't it?
It is a big ask, especially when you've had a really busy week and there was lots of other events going on in Melbourne. But yes, open house.
What is open house for those who haven't been, and what can you actually see and do?
Open house is so phenomenally popular. It's been going for 10 years and there's over 200 buildings, and you can people from could go and visit all of these buildings that most of the time you would never be able to have access to.
It's interesting because Paul, who was just on our house, he's a lawyer, and he said that the courts are open today. So you can actually go and have a tour of the courts in Melbourne if you're
You can go to Parliament House, you can go to Government House, you can go to historic homes, you can go to brand new buildings, you can go and see industrial incinerators designed by Walter Burley Griffin in the 1930s. All sorts of crazy stuff.
Fantastic. So it's open house, and you can go to their website and you can go and check out all of Melbourne's public buildings, so to speak, which is good.
Now, and Russell, private.
Yes, Ted.
You've had an eventful morning.
Oh, Ted, look, you know when you're having a blonde Saturday? Well, mine has been the blondest Saturday I've ever had in my life.
Nothing against blondes, but...
No, I love blondes. Yeah, okay. My preferred, actually. Gentlemen like blondes. No, I don't even know whether I should tell this story, but I'll give it a go.
Start at the beginning.
Right. I got out of bed this morning and had to rush off to work because I had a few pressing appointments at the travel agency today.
Yep.
I got there and, you know, spent my hour and a half at the office, parked my car just down the road, and... I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, yeah, I really better get into Joy and start the radio day. And I'm looking for my car keys. And I thought, oh, you're a silly man. You've left them in the car again. Well, can I just tell you both that, yes, I did leave them in the car. But it gets worse, Ted. It gets worse. I left them in the car with the car door open, with the keys in the car, and the car was running.
Do you know what?
That's really, really crazy. Should you be running this machine right now?
No, I'm worried for the
panel
today.
I think you should go out right now and buy yourself a lottery ticket.
Oh, I should. You know, that's luck.
I hadn't thought of that. On your side.
Well, it's just disappointing. I thought, you know, because I've had my car for 10 years now, so I'm in the market for a new car.
That's where we're at.
And I was thinking, if there was ever going to be a time that I could claim the car on insurance because someone has stolen it, today would have been the day. But I haven't even got, so maybe I won't get a lottery ticket because I haven't got luck on my side. You know? I've still got the red girl, as I like to.
Obviously, is your travel agency in Kew?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it must be an incredibly safe neighbourhood. Everyone should just move to Kew.
We love Fuck You. We do. It's a beautiful.
It
we
is
love
a beautiful.
Fuck You. Yeah, that's what they call Kew. Fuck You.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
so
not swearing, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. So we go back to Tad, who's got some thank yous for us.
I do have some thank yous. First, I want to thank the one person who's responsible for a podcast every week, Peter Tocknell. He does a great job at that.
I can't believe they're up every Monday or Tuesday.
Every Monday.
And God, they're good.
They are good.
He does some great editing for
us.
God, we ramble on.
We do. And this makes us sound really good. I want to thank Alex and Neil, who are on the front desk this morning. Thank you so much. Tess, who did the news earlier. And last and never least, of course, our Joy audience who listen in to us in Melbourne, Australia, and internationally through the Joy app.
We're so lucky.
So thank you. We are very lucky.
We are very lucky here. So now moving right along, we have a special guest.
We always have a special guest in our studio today. We've got the Melbourne editor for and food critic for Australian Gourmet Traveller, Michael Harden. Thank you so much for coming in. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for calling me special. It's made my day.
You are special. You have an incredible job. I think a lot of people probably envy what you do. Tell us a little bit about it.
I'm essentially a freelance writer, but I have been working for Gourmet Traveller for about 9 or 10 years.
Yep.
And so I am the Victorian editor of Gourmet Traveller. I review restaurants. Yep. And then I also do travel stories as well.
Right.
And we put out a national restaurant guide every year. And so I look after Victoria and Tasmania.
Yep.
And so that means that I get to go and travel around Tasmania and eat in restaurants.
That's great.
It's a hard slog, I'm telling you.
It sounds really tough.
We're all just green with envy.
Exactly.
Work.
Yeah. You know what they say? All work and no play, you know. But anyway. And we were talking earlier, there's some changes coming up with Gourmet Traveller and some exciting things happening.
We've got a new editor. We had Anthea Lucas was our editor for many years, and she was a fantastic editor, but has decided to move back to Melbourne. So, you know, we got her back from Sydney anyway, so there's a silver lining on the cloud.
They always come back.
Yeah, exactly. Now we've got Sarah Oakes, and she's our new editor, and we're relaunching the magazine in September, so it's going to have a totally new look, and there's going to be new sections, and some of the old sections are being tweaked.
Yep.
And so it's looking really good. We've got a new art director and everything, so it's going to have a new look.
That's fantastic. I look forward to seeing that. I mean, it's always looked great anyway, but it's just,
Gourmet Traveller has an international reputation. Why do you think that is?
I think that it's because it's been so rigorous and so thorough. One of the things that we do at Gourmet Traveller, we are one of the few magazines, I think, left on the planet that still has sub-editors and fact-checkers.
Oh, wow.
And we have the people that do the recipes in our magazine are both chefs. Mm. And so they kind of, their recipes are done by professional people and they've been doing it for a long time. We use great photographers. It's been a very influential magazine particularly visually, in terms of, worldwide. It's looked at as sort of a leader in how food is shot and looked at and talked about. We've got people up the top like Pat Nurse, who's our managing editor, who's very sharp and really knows his stuff.
That's fascinating.
Well, it's a great publication.
It is, absolutely.
And not only that publication, but you do work for the Good Food Guide as well.
Yes, I work for Fairfax as well, doing some Good Food Guide work there. So that's changing a little bit this year as well.
Yeah.
As everybody, I'm sure, that knows anything about food in this town is aware of the Good Food Guide. It's been around for many years and has always just been about Melbourne and Victoria. But this year, Fairfax has decided to take it national.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a sort of a different book this year.
I think it'll be a fantastic move.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's something that you can take with you when you travel, that sort of thing. So And it's also being pushed out. Normally it comes out in September, but it's coming out in October this year. So be good to have a look at see that. It's been run out of Sydney.
Well, we will all be waiting with bated breath for that one as well.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. Today in the studio with us, we have Michael Harden, Melbourne editor and food critic for Australian Gourmet Traveller. We were talking during the break about some food trends, and do they bore you from time to time?
Yeah, I know. Well, it does. It's sort of like, it's hard not to sort of be looked at as a wanker doing my job, sort of when you complain about having to eat out all the time, you know, because it's like, you know, you can only really talk about that amongst other food writers. But when you do eat out as much as I do, it's sort of like, and trends come in, it does start to become kind of tedious, you know, where it's sort of like sometimes it's like, can I please just have my food on a plate? I don't want it on a roof tile or a leaf or a brick or a piece of log, you know, it's sort of like, just give me a plate.
Yeah, or the old syringe thing. I mean, if I see a hypodermic anyway, just, ugh.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing was just not cool.
Yeah, anyway. I was in New York in the 1980s. I don't need to see any more
syringes. No, exactly. So, yeah, that's right. One of the food trends that I actually think has a lot of merit is obviously sustainability, but also the taking responsibility for community.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a lot of that happening, and I think that's a very good positive thing, which, again, you know, is so much more important than, you know, what your food is being served on, you know, from a unique point of view. How do you see that sort of molding the industry, and is it having, from your point of view, a positive impact?
I think the industry's always been really good at charity, you know, and sort of looking after particular. I think it's one of those things, like, you know, they're always, like, chefs are really generous. Like, they're always giving their time away to sort of worthy causes and that sort of stuff. It's really easy to be cynical about it, but I think at the same time, I think it's the basic nature of the industry is being hospitable and looking after people and feeding them and caring for them. And so this is sort of, in a way, a natural extension of that, I think. So, but I think it's become a little more overt recently, you know, with some sort of like Feast of Merit, you know, that restaurant down in Richmond, that it's sort of like, that's all about, it's sort of non-profit and it's all about helping particular causes and those sort of things. So I think it's, people are becoming more aware of it.
Yeah. And I think people too actually will attach themselves to it if they see, you know, prominent chefs and even not so prominent chefs taking that extra step and trying to make a difference. And and that's what it's about. Just, it's almost just as important as the provenance of where the food's coming from. Is it, you know, free range or, you know, ethical and all that side of it too.
But even that, in a way, is sort of a similar sort of thing, because it's looking after food supply chains and sort of making people think about where their food's coming from and those sort of things. And so we're not kind of trying to, because it is an industry that can damage the planet if you use it carelessly.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think more and more chefs are looking at it to, you know, sort of seeing that is an actual problem and that they can sort of like be proactive about it and make a change.
And as a form of education too, I think a lot of people with a lot of causes don't actually understand the need for the help or the assistance that's required. So I think it's a good platform for that.
Absolutely.
Too.
And I think, you know, also the thing that sort of seems to be, like, if we're talking about food trends, I think one of the trends that I think is a good trend is that increasingly we're starting to see indigenous ingredients coming onto the menus.
Absolutely.
Like, and like not just high end, like the high end guys kind of started it, men and women both started. You're sort of using, you look at people like Kylie Kwong in Sydney and Ben Shuri down here and doing, you know, really good, you know, work with that sort of stuff, but it's becoming sort of, now it's filtering down to the next level where some of these ingredients are starting to become sort of almost commonplace.
Absolutely.
And they're sort of the, like, stuff that's coming from here and is grown here naturally is sort of the most environmentally sound ingredient that you can be using.
That's right. And do you think that's also helping sort of define what Australian cuisine is?
Yeah.
A lot of times I think people have a hard time actually discussing what it is, because we're such a melting pot of all different types of cultures and I think that's probably a really great impact of using that.
Well, I think, you know, we're a young country. It's really hard to sort of define a cuisine in a few hundred years.
Yep.
And I think we're sort of moving towards it. And I think, but, you know, the thing that I love about, you know, the definition about Australian cuisine is it is that sort of adventurousness and a mishmash of different ingredients. But now there's sort of more focus on, like, the flavours that we grow in this country ourselves. Yep. And they're really unique.
Absolutely.
And really hard to use. So that's why, because they really are stringent and really powerful.
And that's the technical side that comes into that to know how to do that and to do it well. That's the other part of it. And I guess, too, when people come to Australia from overseas, it's an opportunity to experience something very unique, because these products aren't growing anywhere else.
No, exactly. Everybody that comes here must eat wallaby.
Right.
It's delicious.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is, absolutely. You know,
I know you wouldn't agree, Fiona.
No, but I have heard it is.
You can have the salt bush that's on the side.
Look, I'm happy to take everyone's word for it. I mean, I think that wallaby is a sustainable meat, which is what's interesting about it, as well as kangaroo. But I certainly have heard that wallaby is just so tender and tasty.
It is.
Yeah.
It certainly is. Mm. And I think it's one of those things, too, that a lot of people turn their nose up to it.
Mm.
And I think it's a shame.
Yeah, Because I think, well, I think in the past, like, you know, Kangaroo has been given a fairly bad reputation because it's been really sort of all over the place. Like, you can never, like, tell with Kangaroo what you're going to get because it's been sort of a particular breed or a particular age. There's a couple of companies now that's really interesting that are doing Kangaroo where it's like they only have, it's only red Kangaroo, it's only males, and they're only of a certain age.
Right.
So you actually can tell there's sort of some actual sort of continuity with the quality of the meat.
Yeah.
Which is helping.
And I guess to the other part with the kangaroo, it's because it's such a lean meat, if it's not cooked properly, you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, kangaroo jerky. Just, if you don't look at it, if like you cook it one second over, it's like, get ready to chew.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what puts people off because it's not a nice experience from that point of view.
It must be a big seller in America, that jerky. Kangaroo jerky.
Yeah. I'm sure there's an untapped market. I think we should patent that now.
Yeah. It'd make a fortune.
Definitely.
I certainly have seen some kangaroo salamis on menus recently. I'm not sure if I've seen wallaby. So you wouldn't turn a wallaby into a salami, would you?
But emu, they do as well. Emu's becoming increasingly popular meat, and it's
A red meat that's 100% cholesterol free, I believe.
That's right. But all sorts of ingredients like that. You know, camel milk. You know, there's a dish on at Attica at the moment with camel milk and things like that that you would not think of using. You know, which again is just discovering these ingredients that are not new.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, camels aren't necessarily indigenous to Australia, but they have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're running around the Northern Territory somewhere.
And they're not going anywhere, so they're not, may as well make themselves useful.
That's right. it's nice to see that happening. And I guess it is a sort of a food trend, but it's more of an evolution too, isn't it?
Yeah.
As opposed to a trend.
And I think it's, when trends, go good. Instead of just, some dumb sort of thing that everybody has to have for 6 months.
Absolutely.
So it's actually something that needs to be encouraged. And
definitely, And I'd almost wish they would not publish food trends for the new year and that just let it evolve, because then you get these people that just copy and, I'm going to do that because it's a food trend,
It does result in some regrettable dishes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're going to have...
dishes. What are they? You must have had one or two of them.
Exactly.
I do eat out a lot, it's true. And you go to restaurants and there's a lot of similarities on the menus.
Yeah.
Everyone does the same versions of the same things.
Absolutely.
And that can be a little frustrating.
Right.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We're here today with our special guest, Michael Harden.
Michael.
Gourmet traveller and food writer, travel writer, and all-round eater around town.
Absolutely.
That doesn't necessarily sound very flattering, but an eater
but
around
it is.
Town.
Yeah.
It is.
Speaking about eating around town, do you ever get tired of dining out? I mean, it is work for you, so I can't imagine on your day off you want to go dine anywhere as a night out.
I love restaurants. I used to work in restaurants, and I like the culture of restaurants, so I do. But I tend to, if I go out when I'm not on the dime, I'll sort of go out to, there's certain places that I'll go out around town that I just can go in and, I can just completely relax. And I love when I can go out and eat and not have to take notes and, look around the room and sort of make sure that I'm sort of keeping on top of everything.
Right.
So, but, given that, it's still a pretty great job. And it's like, there's sometimes you just get these experiences, which you just feel so lucky about, yesterday I was invited to lunch in the Yarra Valley and I went up to Oak Ridge Estate and the food was so good. Like, had a couple of, real talking of wastage and, sort of recycling and everything. They do really good stuff up there. So,
That's great.
I'm sitting there being, drinking wine and looking over the grapevines and it's sunny and everything. And I'm like, yeah, this is
perfect.
This is work.
Mm. Yeah. It must be hard, though, to go into places, on your day off and to be incognito. Obviously, people will probably recognize you.
That old hack here again.
That's right. And they're probably on edge thinking they're reviewing them, but you're just trying to have a quiet meal out.
There's a couple of places that I have as regulars around town that, they know me enough now that they know that I'm not in there working.
Yeah, yeah.
That they're just kind of looking after me. I'm sure, they probably wouldn't order me out of the place or anything like that. It's just kind of like it's a regular experience.
Yeah, and I guess you're not there under an alias or anything like
exactly. I haven't resorted to wigs and fake noses.
That's good.
Yet.
Yeah.
not in this line of work.
Look, if you need those things, Michael, my cupboard at home.
All right, excellent. I'll take you up on
that. That's no lie either.
That's not.
No, but again, you know, obviously when you're reviewing places, you know, you have to keep an open mind about it, and which would be terribly difficult, I'd imagine, from the point of view of trying to be unbiased and as fair as possible. But how do you deal with a situation where the review is negative and there's no way around it? I mean, it's just... It'd be tough.
Yeah, it is tough.
Yeah.
My policy's always been that if a place is really bad, you kind of let it die on its own. I don't want to kick it to death.
No.
You know, because it's like, because it's, what, even if it is really bad and these people don't know what they're doing, they've still invested a lot of money in it. It's their business. You know, it's sort of like, it probably doesn't need my help to kill it. They'll probably kill it themselves. The only time that I'm ever kind of interested in being negative about a restaurant is if I feel they're kind of taking the piss. If they're if they're charging prices, you know, and pretending that they're something that they're not.
Yep.
Or they're like a top-end restaurant that is not treating people all that well.
Right.
You know, that, you know, it's sort of like where, you know, I've had a couple of situations where I've been in a, you know, top-end restaurant and my treatment is noticeably different to the treatment on other tables.
Right.
You know, that kind of really pisses me off, particularly when these are places that people go that are really big food fanatics.
Sure.
And they'll save up all year to go and eat in a restaurant. Yep. And, you know, that's big bucks for them.
Absolutely.
And it's like, so everybody, if you're paying that sort of money, everybody should be treated the same.
Absolutely.
And so that's when I get a bit shirty.
And especially if you're able to notice that, you know, it's visibly noticeable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, but I guess too, from the other side of that too, if a restaurant is actually trying to be the best they can be, they're actually going to listen to your critique.
Yeah.
And not necessarily reject it. Listen to it. You know what you're doing. You're in this role because you know what you're doing and you're experienced in it.
Yeah.
And they would actually embrace it and hopefully take it on board.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, but it's sort of like, it's only the ones that are so terrible.
Yeah.
Like the one that I had at the other night where they basically, part of one thing that they gave me was this like dried up lettuce leaf that looked like it came out of the compost and somebody had sneezed on it.
Oh, no.
And I was like...
It's a great way to make that sound appetizing.
It's probably a French word for it.
That's right. Probably not allowed to say it on air.
Yeah.
But I guess it's one of those scenarios too. Sometimes, it's, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, you don't say it at all.
Yeah,
it's that
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, also within, you know, if we're talking about, you know, my role as food reviewer at Gourmet Traveller, I have 12 reviews a year. Like, we're monthly. And so our magazine is about telling people where they should go.
Right.
You know, so this is a great place. This is where you should eat.
Yep.
You know, it's not like I can't waste one of my 12 reviews to sort of, you know, there's a lot of terrible restaurants out there. You know, on the other hand, if you're someone like, you know, John Lethlean at The Australian or Jemima Cody at The Age, you know, where they've got sort of 40, 50 reviews a year.
Sure.
That gives you more scope to sort of give a negative. And like, you know, I think that sometimes restaurants do need a bit of a kicking to
get complacent.
Exactly.
Especially in Melbourne.
I mean, there's so many restaurants. Do you find that possibly one of the things that lets down a lot of restaurants is service?
Yeah. Service is a problem, I think. But saying that, Melbourne is pretty good compared to like the rest of the country, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Hobart's got some good people as well, I think. But, you know, Melbourne, I think, is generally pretty strong. But I think there's still... The culture of service in this country is still lagging behind a lot of places. And there's still sort of a bit of a stigma about hospitality, about being a waiter. It's sort of like that whole thing about, oh, I'm doing it while I'm going to uni or before I could become an actor or, you know, those sort of things. Whereas... And you look at the best professionals in the country, and there's some really good people here. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really honourable profession. Like looking after people, making sure they feel better, making sure that when they walk out of the restaurant, they feel better than they came in. You know, if you want to get really sort of philosophical about it, it makes for a better society because if you're making people happy, they're out on the streets being well fed and well looked after and well cared for. Happy, more cohesive society, surely.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you do, if you're nice to somebody, then there'll be a good chance they'll be nice to the next person
And, you know, having had a hospitality background, you kind of like, you know, it is a bit of a struggle sometimes because some people have come in just spoiling for a fight.
Yeah.
But you just have to sort of go, okay, they're like toddlers. They just need something to eat, something to drink, and being told they're special. And then you've got them. So it's
Does seem like pretty straightforward. It's amazing how often it can kind of get screwed up from there.
Yeah.
How do you do you take that sort of philosophy similar when you do travel and write travel stories?
Yeah, Yeah, travel is a, you know, it's a different beast in a way, because a lot of the time I'm not. The stories that I do are more about experiences, and I'm not sort of like reviewing an airline or, you know, that sort of stuff. So it's sort of like what I'm trying to do with the travel writing is to give people a bit of an experience about, like, try and write about it as I saw it or how it happened so that they can kind of live it alongside me. So, you know, that's kind of...
I think sometimes when you read travel stories, it seems like everything was really... interesting and exciting, but we also know that when you travel, there's always unpleasant experiences that happen, and whether you don't always have the room to write about, obviously, the negative experiences. But there are always going to be components that aren't going to go right.
There's usually one or two, but you know, I've been pretty lucky. You know, it's sort of like the people that have been that have organised the trips that I'm on have done it really, really well.
You've got a good travel agent, haven't you?
Travel agents are probably the most amazing people in the world. I think, they do a great service.
You must come on this show more often. Thank you. Say it once, I'll say it 1,000 times. Don't travel without a good travel agent. Exactly. So I appreciate you saying that.
They actually know what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. I was Googling you today. And I noticed there was a YouTube video that came up about reviewing classes. Are they still available? Because I know listeners would love to do your job. Who wouldn't want to do Michael's job? Are they still available for people to do from
Not
time to time?
Not at the moment. No. We occasionally do them at Essential Ingredient in Paran. And I just have done one at the Emerging Writers Festival with Larissa Besky, who's another really great food writer and, well, writer generally, where we did a class there where we sort of talked to people about that. So they do come up from time to time. So and people are really interested in it. And it's really fun, like, to sort of sit around, have dinner and sort of pull a dish apart and, like, you know, get people to sort of, like, how they would – and, you know, sort of, like, slap people down when they try and use the word yummy.
Oh. I dislike that word.
Yeah, I really into do. The incinerator and second offence into the wood chipper.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Even in a casual level, I can't stand it.
I think you'd be a good reviewer, Ted. I think you'd be able to, you know, you'd be right out there.
I would enjoy it, probably. I don't know.
I think so.
What's your favourite travel destination, Michael?
Oh, look... I've had probably Hawaii is one of them. I really, really love Hawaii. Yep. Iceland is the other one that I absolutely love. I had a really, really great trip there about 18 months ago. That was you can't put any other spin on it than it was a junket.
And nothing wrong with that.
Went over to
at least you're honest.
Yes, Dom Perignon. Oh, new champagne. And it was imperative that they flew me from Melbourne to go over to Iceland to see its birth.
Under the Northern Lights,
Under the Northern Lights, exactly.
Food in Iceland's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
It's
different.
It's different. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, Reykjavik is a really, really, really great town.
Yeah.
Like, I could, you know, it was one of those places that I went to and I thought I could see myself kind of living here for a while. Yeah. It's like it's small, but it's like there's so much going on there.
Yeah.
And the food, there's some really modern food there. But they've also had, because they used to have an American base, military base stationed there. So there's a lot of kind of burger fry.
Really?
Kind of like, you know, and really well preserved from the 50s and 60s. So there's a couple of places that are like, there's this one place that looks like a 50s diner.
Yep.
And it's got a mirror ball in the middle of it.
Really?
And it's sort of like after a certain time of night, it turns into a bar because the Iceland, you know, that they love a bar.
Sure.
And a late night.
Yeah.
So, which is probably why I thought I should go and live there.
That's perfect.
But I did have, like, you know, some of their modern food, and I had an interesting meal, and it was a collection. One of the dishes was a collection of three small burgers.
Right.
And it was whale burger, puffin burger, and reindeer burger.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about
the local
reindeer.
Dishes, obviously.
Yeah. So all about sort of local ingredients. The restaurant was about modern versions of local ingredients.
Right. Wow.
Really smart, great wine list and everything. Didn't really want to eat whale just on a kind of, you know, political, environmental level, but I thought, okay, it's in front of me, I'll do it. Now that I've eaten, it's like I don't want to eat whale on an aesthetic level.
Same thing happened to me. I was in Alaska at Barrow, which is right up top north, and we went, part of this trip was to go and have dinner with locals, and they're allowed to, each family is allowed to, native Alaskans there, they're allowed to kill one whale each, and they keep that, not in a freezer, but in an underground whole, really, yeah. Because it's so cold up there. And the most tasteless piece of rubber I've ever eaten in my life. And just, you know, it didn't matter how much soy sauce I put on it. I just, and you know, you're in front of people and you're going, it was very difficult.
There was so much blood in the
yes. pot.
Oh, like, okay, I never need to have
for
that.
So little, yeah. For so little
meat.
Meat, yeah.
That's right. When were you in Reykjavik?
Probably about time of year.
Yeah.
It was May.
Okay, so just at the start of the summer season.
Yeah, it was like, and it had that, you know, that freaky light thing going on where you'd go out to dinner and it's sort of like you'd stagger out at, you know, 11 o'clock and it was bright daylight.
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it's like, oh, I can't go home to bed now. I must go to another bar.
That's a good
It's calling man. You.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I probably would be dead in 6 months after living in Reykjavik, but, you know.
Michael, you did another trip recently that sort of piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing cruise through the Komodo National Park Indonesia.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
This was an amazing, like, this is one of those great, you know, reasons to do this job. Like, and it was the yacht was run by a company called Aman. Mm-hmm. They have a series of like really high end luxury hotels around in sort of remote places around the world. It was a 53-meter teak yacht. And it had, there was six of us. It's sort of the berthing. It sort of had three double cabins and then two sort of small bunk cabins. Yep. And there was six of us on the trip, 15 staff.
Right.
Wow.
And that's it was the way to just, travel. And it was, we learned how to, they were, including a dive master. So we learned how to scuba dive. Like that's there was great. Somebody that could train us how to scuba dive. It's basically a scuba diving vessel for very wealthy people.
Right.
And it went through Komodo National Park, which is superb, like nothing I've ever seen before. Some of the greatest scuba diving in the world.
Right.
That's from my great experience of my five dives that I did while I was there. But I've been told
the first time.
It's great. First time. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've scuba'd a lot, but I'm snorkeled a lot, but I've never scuba dived before. And I didn't know whether it was possible, but because it's this kind of boat, there's somebody there that can take you through. Right. So I'm now certified.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really good.
It was great.
And the food would have been amazing on board.
Food was great. You just, you know, there's a chef there and they basically have menus and you can have stuff whenever you want. There was like this in the main kind of, we spent most of the time out on the deck, but it was sort of in the main cabin. There was like, we called it the magic cupboard.
Right.
Which was actually like, it looked like a cupboard, but you opened it and it was like a portal to the kitchen.
Right.
Mm. So everything would come out of the magic, you could get anything out of the magic cupboard. So
that's all right.
It was, and you know, it was ridiculous. You know, I was sort of lying there on the deck getting massaged, you know, as the boat's going and, you know, thinking, this is work.
Would we call that as a junket as well, or possibly
that
not?
It was pretty, like, it had all the hallmarks of a junket, but it was actually a travel
story. It was work,
And what do you think of cruising, Michael? It's the fastest growing industry in as far as travel goes.
I would, like, you know, ask me that question like 2 or 3 years ago, and I would have run screaming in the other direction, thought I'd rather, you know, poke my eyes out than go on a cruise. But I think they're actually realizing that how there's sort of like, there's a billion different ways to cruise.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's these smaller boats and they're going to remote areas. You know, you'd know more about this, but the ones that goes up to, you know, in the north coast of Western Australia, you know, where they're those small boats and they're real adventure things. You can get on, you know, dinghies that go up.
They're real exploratory cruises and they're absolutely amazing.
I have heard about those. They look stunning.
Yep. Mm. We could see you on one of those, Pete. I think you'd have a great time.
But, you know, awesome. Those huge boats with, you know, 47 pools and water slides.
Is that for you?
Maybe not. Unless I had a really big cabin that I never need to leave.
Or you could
and room service.
Yeah, exactly.
Not yet.
Yeah.
And a giant minibar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my idea of a nightmare, actually.
Yeah.
But I've done a few of those cruises with smaller numbers.
You're a cruiser too, aren't you?
Yeah. And I love them. You know, you get to see some smaller ports and things like that. And even, you know, like it was a few years back, but it was a cruise that went all the way up to Cooktown and Thursday Island, you know, those sorts of areas that we'd never get to really an opportunity to see. And it's just, it's great to be with those smaller numbers. And
there's something about being on those smaller boats as well, that you do tend to sort of bond a bit with the people that you're traveling with as well. You know, it's kind of, it does end up being sort of fairly sort of collegiate sort of environment where everybody's kind of having, because you're all sort of sharing these new experiences at the same time.
That's right.
Mm. And it actually becomes you've got something in common because you're seeing everybody's seeing the same thing you for the first time.
That's right.
And it's kind of, it's a nice atmosphere.
And you're sharing that. people the journey.
Absolutely.
For lack of a better word.
Was there any fear around getting your being certified to be a scuba diver? I'd be wanting to see the other guy's certificate and say, you know, you do know what you're doing here, right?
She was the dive master was this very competent blonde Belgian woman that it was sort of like, you know, it's like, okay, you know what you're doing. but I must admit that, you know, I panicked to start with because it is quite a weird experience of like having to sort of breathe through that. But I panicked and I was floating and, you know, floundering around. And at one stage, by the end of it, I thought, okay, now I've got it. Okay, I've got the breathing, I'm going and everything. And then I was like, what's that tickling sensation on the back of my head? And I realized it was the surface of the water.
Joy 94.9.
We are in the studio today with myself, Russ and Fiona, and we've got Michael Harden from Gourmet Traveler with us today. Getting back to the trip we were talking about earlier about the Komodo National Park, did you get to see any Komodo dragons while you were there?
I certainly did. Yeah. I was up close and personal with a couple of them.
Really?
Sort of like, yeah, they're quite fearsome.
Yeah.
Wasn't that happy about being that up close.
I wouldn't have been either.
Particularly when there was a very skinny 50-year-old boy with a forked stick as the only thing between us and the dragon. But they were sort of more interested in the rotting deer carcass that was hanging from the tree that they were tearing shreds off upwind from us. So we were downwind.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it was a fairly sort of hands-on experience.
Absolutely, because you don't want to get in the path of one of them, do you? I mean, they're pretty vicious. And
they can give you a pretty nasty bite. They're sort of they're not, you know, I think they're not sort of crocodile-like in terms of like, but with the way that they hunt their prey, that their teeth, they've got all these really razor-sharp teeth. They look like something out of some sort of fantasy Game of Thrones kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they've got all these needle-sharp teeth that are full of like disgusting bacteria. And so what they do is that they chomp you on the back of the leg or something, and then they follow you around for the next 2 days until you die of bacterial poisoning, and then they
great
eat. Yeah, so
jeez, we must go, Fee.
Yeah. Well, look, I tell you, as long
we
as
we are, this is a food show.
Food and travel.
As long as we don't, I think the good thing about the fierce Komodo dragons is then you won't have people posing with them in their photos.
No.
You know that horrible travel trend of posing with the tiger or with the you know, that regrettable. That's not
responsible
good.
Travel, we call it.
Yeah. Irresponsible? Or
Well, that's irresponsible. Right, okay. But, you know, responsible travel is like people like you and I saying, don't do that.
But they can run pretty fast.
Leave the dragon alone.
Exactly, yeah.
But they can run pretty fast, can't they?
Oh, yeah, and they can swim.
Yeah,
too.
That's the other problem.
So they swim between islands, so you sort of wouldn't really want to be in that kind of channel where the Komodos were swimming. I wouldn't want to come across them as I was scuba diving
on
the
surface. Yeah.
It's interesting, Michael, because so many people think Indonesia is just Bali or Jakarta.
You know,
and that would be what most Australians would think Indonesia is all about. But you've seen something that's absolutely spectacular in a national park that, you know.
Yeah. Seriously, like, I've seen the landscape and the look of the place. Nothing like I've ever seen before. Like, you know, we're sailing past and, like, there's mountains that are, you know, volcanoes coming up out of the ocean that are just sort of gently smoking, you know. It's sort of like, it looks like something out of a film, you know. It's, like, so beautiful and so many very deserted beaches and, you know, amazing wildlife. We saw, you know, manta rays and swam with sea turtles and, you know, it's
beautiful.
Sort of like we found Nemo, you know. It's sort of like, you know, the whole thing was, like, it was amazing. So
yeah, there's a lot to Indonesia to discover. I did hear some disturbing report the other day about somebody who was talking about they could create another 6 Balis in Indonesia.
And, right.
I mean, that is going to be good for some people, but there's a lot to explore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hope they do something constructive with it. Yeah. Something.
Yeah.
And talking about exploring, bring it back to Australia and maybe a bit closer to home in Victoria. What are some of your recommendations for things that are up and coming and kind of maybe off the beaten track or something that people don't know about yet that is going to be
There's a few things. Like, you know, first off, I've just been done an article about the northeast of Victoria in the King Valley, and there is so much great stuff going up there. If you like, you know, the food and wine, the tourism and the beautiful scenery and all of that, there's so many good things going up there. So that was, like, you know, Rutherglen, Bright, Beechworth, Myrtleford, all those places, you know, people making amazing butter and chocolate and, you know, really good Italian varietal wines and that sort of thing. The other one that's really exciting that's coming up is on the Mornington Peninsula, and it's at Point Leo Estate.
Okay.
And they're in the midst of spending a lot of money to put in a restaurant and a sculpture park. That's John Gandel owns the estate, and he has an amazing sculpture collection, you know, big
big right. sculpture.
Yep.
Sort of people like Inga King and that sort of right. thing. So they're putting in a restaurant with, and they've snaffled another snaffle from Sydney, Phil Wood, who was the head chef for Neil Perry at right. 11 Bridge.
Yep.
So he's going to be cooking there. And they're doing the landscaping and stuff. The building's amazing, and the landscaping they're doing. There's going to be two walks that you can do to look at all the sculpture, and okay. one of them's like 45 minutes, and the other one's like an hour and a half or something like
right.
that.
Right, okay.
So you can go and like walk before lunch or walk after yep. lunch or just walk, you know, if you don't want to
so have
lunch.
So you don't have to have lunch. Oh, great.
No, and it's a winery as well. So okay. they've got their own, it's about, I think they've had vines growing there for about 10 years. So the wines are just starting to sort of come into their own now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on Mornington Peninsula because recently with the Jackalope Hotel.
That's right, yeah.
Opening at Willow Creek as well, which is spectacular.
Have you been down there?
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the
It's not a cheap hotel.
No.
It's like it starts at like $6.50 a night.
Yep.
But it's a beautiful hotel. But if you don't want to like fork out that much money for a hotel room, they've got a really good sort of more casual restaurant there called Rare Hair.
Okay.
Which the food is really, really good.
Yeah.
The outlook is fantastic. It's a really nice place. So if you're tootling around Mornington Peninsula having a bit of a day trip, it's a nice one. They do great coffee too.
Oh,
so,
that's important. You know?
Yeah, always. Yeah. Can never be too far from great coffee.
Definitely.
So. You know, Michael, it sounds like you have this amazing life. You probably need a driver. I mean, one of us could drive you to all of these places.
I'll carry bags.
Exactly.
Yeah. I normally go by chopper. So if you
so there's weight restrictions. Is that what you're trying to say?
Do you have any travel tips for us?
Look, my travel tips, it's, you know, I love going to, you know, it's the new places and everything. My favorite, like, you know, one of my travel tips is go to Hawaii.
Mm.
Yep. You know, it's sort of like, because it's like, there's so much to do there. And I think, you've been, obviously.
Love it. Yeah.
And it's
stunning.
Don't you reckon it's one of those places
that... You haven't
been? Well, I have family there. It's pathetic.
You know, I love Kauai. The
I love Kauai. Yeah. Yeah, big fan.
That's where I'm going next. Beautiful. I've never been there, because the last time I was there, I was on Molokai.
Yes.
Which is that tiny little, you know, and it's like the least touristed, you know, and it's all like no traffic lights, no building taller than a palm tree.
It's fantastic.
And, you know, and the big highlight of it is you can take a mule ride to a leper colony. So, you know, that's something that you don't do every day.
Well, who wouldn't want to do that?
Exactly. Down a death-defying sea cliff. It's really great.
Yeah. Well, they've got some of those death-defying sea cliffs also in Kauai.
Yes.
They have the Kalalau Trail.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I did the Kalalau Trail when I was there, and it was exciting, very exciting, but I wouldn't suggest you go if you have a fear of heights.
Right.
No,
definitely not.
But yeah, I think anyone who goes to Hawaii has to get out of Waikiki. Very American would be.
But I think that it's also good to like spend 2 or 3 days in Waikiki, because it's like got that real Americana, Tropicana, tacky kind of tourist thing.
Right.
Really fun, you know, but you wouldn't want to spend, you know, a long time.
I'm all for you guys grabbing a tiki mug and going from, you know, going to Moose McGallagutty's bar and having a few Mai Tais. Go for it. It's the only way to visit Hawaii.
That's right.
But I don't know. There's something about the temperature and the kind of the pace and everything that I think it's everybody that I know that has been there once always goes back.
Yeah.
So, which is one of those places.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. In the studio with us today is Michael Harden from Australian Gourmet Traveller. God, it's been a quick hour.
I know, that flew past.
Very fun and, you know, thank you for all the tips and will you come back and join us again sometime?
Love to. It's been really fun.
Yeah, if you go to a fabulous destination that you simply must tell everyone about.
Yeah, brag.
Definitely.
Make us all envy.
Time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all about exploring destinations and also familiar destinations seen, you know, through different eyes. Mm.
Well, you seem to know Victoria very well, Michael. Where do you think we should do an outside broadcast?
I mean,
You would know the hot spots and the places where we could go and have a bit of fun.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think we should sort of line it up with Jackalope, and because, you know, then they'd probably have to, like, we'd need to do it in the morning, so they'd have to put us up overnight.
That's a joke. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. And then,
I hope they're listening.
Yeah, exactly. We'll make sure we'll send them a link.
Yeah, we like junkets, don't we? Mm.
Definitely.
I don't get enough. I personally don't get enough of them. Yeah. Because my employer, I'll tell you, you know.
Yeah. I know my employer doesn't let me out very often.
Yeah.
Who wants to own a small business?
I don't know.
I'm questioning
We're all small business people, aren't we? That's why we're so crazy that we're taking us out today.
That's why we've got our armchair travellers on today and we're, you know, on the edge of our chairs with Michael thinking, oh my God, how do I get your job?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's sign up for one of those courses pretty soon. Let us know what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
What's the most bizarre place you've ever been, Michael?
Oh, wow. I think probably, I'm just trying to think, probably the Blue Lagoon in Iceland, just because it's this sort of the number of different bodies that I saw in that, because they're very sort of open about that. And it was sort of like this, it was a really cold day, and it's an outside hot spring, and it's bright blue, and it's sort of like just clouds of steam. And it was sort of like, and it was really sort of cinematic, because you'd sort of lie there and this wind would blow through and the steam would clear, and all of a sudden there'd be all these very unusually shaped bodies kind of like emerging. So it was sort of quite sort of like something out of a Fellini movie or something like that. So I thought, I need a soundtrack for this. Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's sort of either, you know, I didn't know whether the Benny Hill theme music or something. I don't know.
That sounds
and
amazing.
Where would you like to go next that you haven't been to?
I want to do an onsen tour of Japan, which I've never done.
Oh, well, I can vouch for those.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I love Japan.
It's so beautiful. An onsen tour?
Onsen and whiskey distillery tour, I think, would be my you know, great go-to at
Your
the moment.
People should talk to each other.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Well, we'll certainly be thinking about all those places.
Definitely. And Michael, again, thank you so much for coming in today. Yes. And we've had a great time. It's gone way too quickly, but we will be back next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.